comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth, thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. We're here because you have a right to know. It's the show where you matter. On a night very much like tonight, back in 2008, as a matter of fact, it was almost, we're almost at the same time of the year. It was in April, April the 17th, 2008. I sat at the microphone and listened, stunned, with our audience worldwide listening and stunned at the amazing story we were hearing from our guest, John Vasquez. John Vasquez was telling us about having been a member of the U.S. Army, and about having been sent in 1977 to Fort Benning, that's in Georgia. He was sent there for additional training. And while there, according to John Vasquez, there was a UFO incident, not just a sighting, but an incident, a huge incident. An incident that involved mass abduction of 12 to 1300 U.S. Army soldiers, engagement by the U.S. Army with this UFO, in other words, a battle, helicopters that were shot down, soldiers that were injured in this battle. It was an amazing story. It was a story that, as we listened, I knew that some of our audience, perhaps many of our audience, were raising at least one eyebrow and saying, I'm not so sure I buy this. And the reason is, it was a story that was so far out of our realm of personal experience. As a matter of fact, the next day I received an email from one of my friends, an email that said, that was one heck of a sci-fi plot Vasquez spun last night. And that was from a friend. So I knew that there had to be large portions of our audience who had the same response. John Vasquez has been my guest on this show several times. But that night, in 2008, I have to admit I was stunned. You know me, I don't believe or disbelieve anything. I either say that I know that this or that is a fact, and I have the evidence to back it up, or I say I don't know. And I put it into the basket that's labeled needs further investigation. Well, the John Vasquez story has been in that basket, needs further investigation, since I first heard it in 2008. Maybe you were in the audience that night. Maybe you remember. And maybe you remember saying to yourself, like my friend did, that was one heck of a sci-fi plot. But what if it were true? What if there was a witness to step forward? Tonight, you will hear from that witness. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Command Sergeant Major James Norton. James, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you, sir.
First, I want to thank you for all your years of service. You probably hear that enough, but thank you for your years of service.
Thank you, sir.
Now, formerly, James, you were a police officer, and then you joined the U.S. Army.
Yes, sir.
When did you join the U.S. Army?
It was early 1977, around January.
Now, for those in our audience who may not know how our rank structure works here in the United States, because our audience is in a lot of different countries, and ranks go by different names, and there are different requirements around the world. But for those who do not know, we have two corps. We have in the U.S. Army, we have the enlisted men, and you have the officers. Among the enlisted, the rank of sergeant major is the highest rank that you can attain.
Yes, sir.
And among sergeant majors, command sergeant major is the highest designation. And folks,
yes,
in
E-9.
Order, I'm sorry?
It's an E-9, command sergeant major. That's the rank.
Mm-hmm. And folks, in order to become a sergeant major, that rank is attained by years of service, years of stellar performance reviews, and superior performance on a battery of tests. And then there is more to reach the designation of command sergeant major. So it's not a small thing. It is a high rank. And I can tell you folks personally that I know this to be a fact. I've been on a number of our military bases around the world, and it always there's always a lieutenant colonel or a general in charge of the base.
Yes, sir.
But the person who's running that base is a command sergeant major in most cases. That's who's actually running the base. And so everyone around the world will have a picture of who we are talking to here tonight. James, you by now are familiar with this amazing story told by John Vasquez and about this incredible, phenomenal UFO incident that he says took place at Fort Benning back in 1977. And you have decided to step forward and say it's true that you were a witness. So take us back to 1977 at Fort Benning and tell us what happened.
Okay. It was a live fire system they had just put into effect in the military. It was called a joint attack weapon system. It was a brand new system that the military had set up. And we went out to that range that night. It was about midnight. There were 1,200 to 1,300 troops out there with us. And we started doing the live fire. And a little while later, we started seeing this stuff in the sky, orbs, you know, going around and stuff, and other things. And seen something downrange, or one of the advisors seen something downrange, and they called a ceasefire. Well, the next thing we know, we're seeing these, like, lasers shoot across the sky. These crafts come in, at Mach 2, over the base. That's when all hell broke loose.
How many crafts?
And at the time, it's still burning my memory to this day.
How many craft did you see coming in?
We've seen three at first.
And they were definitely not ours?
Two or three more that come in. And that's when it really broke loose.
Okay, and these craft were not ours?
No, sir.
Had you ever seen anything like it?
Aircraft looked like. My unit was stationed beside the airfield. at Fort Benning, Georgia, at Lawson Field. And I know what, you know, jets look like, Cessnas, you know, small craft, Harrier jets and stuff like that. I know what aircraft look like.
Okay, so these were definitely not ours. You saw three at first, and then you, I think you said you saw some more that, that came in later?
Yes, sir.
How many
yes,
total?
Sir.
How many total craft did you see?
Well, about six altogether.
Okay, and you saw them start firing these laser beams around the sky?
Yes, sir.
Were they firing any of the laser beams down at the ground?
Right, sir.
Okay. Tell us the next thing that happened. Just take us through the story.
Well, when we saw this, they called a ceasefire. Okay. And then from there, when all hell really broke loose, when they called a ceasefire. And then that's when the object went downrange, and it was in the firing line. That's the reason they called the ceasefire. And then... It was rough, I'm telling you what, because all hell broke loose. All kind of explosions started. Beams being shot across the area of the troops. I mean, there were 1,200 to 1,300 troops there that night. And there were several of them that were injured from it. Burnt. Memory loss. I mean, all kind of stuff. It was just unbelievable.
Okay, how long total have you been in the U.S. Army?
Well, I went in the first of January of 1977. I had two breaks in service. So, been in about 18 and a half years.
In all that time, have you ever seen anything else like this?
Yes, sir.
You have?
I was at USAC Military Police Company there on Main. And we had an incident in 1986. It was recovered. It was in
Are you having problems with your telephone?
No, sir.
Okay, well, it's interrupting. Something's interrupting you.
Okay.
I can guess what.
Somebody was trying to beep in, sir. I'm sorry.
Yeah. All right. So in 1986, you had an incident, and then there was a break in your audio. So go back to that and tell us what happened.
Okay, in 86, there was a downed craft in an area that started a pretty good-sized, you know, brush fire. And the fire department was called, other units were called off post to come and help assist put this fire out. Well, when I got down there, and this was my duty for the whole post, was the security of the whole post. And I had 40 other men under me working with this, you know, to keep the post secure. And... we got a call about this fire, so we took off out there to see where, you know, what range it was on and everything. We finally found out what was in the K block. And we got there, and we had, like, deputy sheriffs, police from off post that come on to, you know, post to try to assist. And when I seen what I did, the craft that had crashed there was, like, nose in the ground. And you can see where it comes through the trees because it cut some of the tops of the trees out.
What, describe the craft for us. What did it look like?
Well, this one here was kind of like an oblong, more than circular. It was more like an oblong craft. It had quite a bit of damage to the front of the craft when it went in the ground. And next thing I know, here comes CID, MPI. And which, you know, I'm military police, so I'm already there, and I'm controlling, you know, the perimeter, not letting nobody in. And we've got all these civilians coming from off post, home post, to see what went on. I don't know if they were monitoring the radio system or what, but within just a little bit, we had quite a few civilians coming on post to see what was going on.
And what was this craft? Where was it? Was it a test aircraft?
I'm not sure. I have no idea if it was ours or something else. Cause I don't think it was ours because the shape of it and the metal in it, I don't think it was ours.
All right, let's go back to 1977 again.
Okay.
And I'm in a moment, I'll bring up an incident that happened in 2006 in November.
Right.
And you may be familiar with it. But let's go back to 1977. On this night, we have 12 to 1,300 troops. We have a live fire exercise going on. I'll call them unidentified flying objects because you said they weren't ours. They came in at Mach 2. And let me ask you this. As they came in, did they slow down or did they just sort of come in and stop suddenly?
Just come right in and stop.
Uh-huh. Was there any...
Unbelievable how quick they stopped.
Any sound?
No sound whatsoever.
And were these circular craft?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And so they just came in and stopped. And what do you have any idea what was the reason they started firing these laser beams?
Yes, sir, because we fired on them.
Okay, so we fired on them first.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Sure did.
And why would we have fired on them first?
Well, one of our helicopters got shot down. That's the reason we returned fire.
Okay. So one of our helicopters got shot down by one of these craft?
Yes, sir.
It's interesting that there was a report of some helicopters going down, back then, and I think they said it was because of weather.
Oh, no. No, it was crystal clear that night. There was no weather whatsoever. It was crystal clear.
All right, now, when John Vasquez was with us and told us about this amazing incident, he said that it almost, at times, the lights from the lasers and the flashing artillery and whatever, there was so much of it, it almost looked like strobe lights going off. Is that what you saw?
Yes, sir. Same thing. Okay. We all observed it.
Okay, so you observed it, you saw it, you were there on the range. Were you involved in any of the firing on the UFOs, any engagement with the UFOs?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What were you doing?
Well, I was up there at the checkpoint because the security perimeter that I was in charge of,
mm-hmm.
we had the Secretary of Defense there that night.
Mm-hmm.
His name, Clifford Alexander. He was the Secretary of the Army, and it was my job to protect him.
Okay. Now, some of the researchers have gone back and, they've checked, they've asked, and it was denied that he was there, and yet they found newspaper reports stating that he was there.
Oh, yeah. He was there. I was standing right beside him. I know he was there, and all his aides.
And
he had 15 aides with him.
Were they watching this battle with these UFOs?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, sir.
Did Clifford Alexander make any comments or say anything about what was going on?
We need to get the hell out of here, is what he said. That's exactly what he said. We need to get the hell out of here.
Well, that's sensible.
And, they didn't take much time getting out of there, I'm going to tell you that.
All right, now, how long did this battle go on, Jim?
Oh, goodness, probably a good 30, maybe 45 minutes.
And in the course of this battle, you've already told us about a helicopter that went down. How many other of our aircraft went down?
I know I seen the one go down, and another one was hit, and it auto-rotated down, but I know the first one got hit hard. Because it crashed and started burning.
Mm-hmm.
And what really got me, later on, I found out that the FAA did not even investigate it.
Well, now, that's interesting. Would the FAA have any jurisdiction since it was on a military base?
They should have. They should have.
Okay.
But I know the next day, the post commander called all of us that was there that wasn't injured that night, in front of his building, Building 4 on Fort Benning, the post commander told us, this incident never happened, it does not exist, you talk of it, you will be court-martialed, you'll never see your family again.
Okay, well, and that's predictable. That's been kind of their response since 1947.
Right.
But here you are now a serving command sergeant major, and you're talking about it.
Oh yes, sir.
Why have you decided to step forward and talk about this?
I have been trying to contact a lot of the other members, service members that was there that night, and then I found John. I remember John real good because we spoke that night for a few minutes. And then the other guys, I've contacted several of the other guys that was there that night. They are afraid to come forward because some of them are still in duty, active duty. Some are reserves, some are National Guard, and they're worried that that's going to hurt their career.
And you're not?
No, I'm not worried.
Why are you not worried?
Oh, you wouldn't believe the phone calls I've had. I mean, I've had people calling me, blocking their number on my phone, telling me, if you go forward with this, you and your family is going to pay for it and all this other stuff, you know. I said, well, look, you know where I'm at. I said, you know, come on, no problem. But I just want the truth to be told. That's what I want. I don't want no gratuities or anything out of this. I don't. I just want the truth to be known, what happened that night, what the cover-up was, and then several of us were deathly sick with the measles, and then we had an unknown origin in our body. They could not detect what it was.
An unknown what?
It was on the my medical records, it says unknown origin.
Uh-huh.
That's what it says on my medical records where I was injured.
Okay.
They could not classify what it was in me making me this sick. For 2 days straight, 48 hours, every 15 minutes, my temperature went so high, it was 104. Every 15 minutes around the clock, they were dunking me in this tub of ice water. For 15 minutes, they take me out 15 minutes, put me back in 15 minutes. This went on for 2 days to try to get my temperature down.
One of the things that John described for us is that when these UFOs would fire, and we have a break coming up, so I'll go ahead and set this up, and we'll get into it after the break. But when these UFOs would fire, it was almost like they were firing a ball of energy, an orb of energy. And if I remember correctly, he says that is what hit the helicopter and took the helicopter down. And if I remember correctly, and you can correct me on this when we come back from break, that's what was hitting the soldiers and injuring them. And we'll get into that once we come back. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Don't go away. You're listening to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Command Sergeant Major James Norton. And Jim, when we went away for break, I had brought up what John Vasquez had told us, at least what I remember of what he told us. You got to understand that this show I did with him where he told us about this was in 2008. Now, it stuck with me, but I may have a few of the details a little fuzzy. But what I remember is that he said these UFOs were firing what looked like a plasma ball that hit and enveloped the helicopter, and the helicopter began to shake violently and went to the ground.
Yes, sir.
Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Sure is.
All right. Now, is that the same thing that was being fired at the soldiers?
Yes, sir. Same thing.
Are you there?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah. When these would hit the soldiers, what happened?
Well, I was one of the soldiers that got burnt from it. And I have medical documentation, I have pictures, and also I have all my medical records from the hospital.
Now, describe the wound. What kind of a wound did it cause?
A severe fast third-degree burn. I mean, it was unbelievable how bad I was burnt. It burnt right through my BDUs into my skin, and I was trying to, get it off of me, and it just kept burning.
In the recovery process after being wounded, did the wound, as you were recovering, did it have any unusual characteristics?
Yes, sir. It had like a red powder. It's what it looked like on my BDUs. It felt like powder, but it had like granules in it or something.
You were actually wounded in action.
Yes, sir.
Did you receive a Purple Heart for that?
No, sir, I did not.
So this is an unacknowledged battle.
Exactly. They say it did not happen. It did not exist.
Mm-hmm.
But I have all the medical records to prove that night.
What do you suspect may happen to you as a result of coming forward with this?
Oh, I've already had several phone calls from people that if I go forward with this, that my family and me would suffer from it, and all kind of stuff. And what the bad thing was, they blocked their number. Well, I couldn't see it, but I always take a call because it may be an emergency call, and I would always take the call.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I've had several crackpots call, several of them, and I put them in their place.
Why do you suspect that? Well, first of all, let's clarify this. Do you suspect those calls are coming from sources inside the U.S. Army?
I believe so. That's the reason they're blocking their number, so I cannot call them back.
Why do you suspect the U.S. Army would want to suppress this information and not allow the people who are paying their salary to know it?
Because if they knew what technology that I saw that night, they would be blown away. They wouldn't be able to understand it, probably.
How did the battle turn out? Did we down any of their craft?
Oh, yeah. Sure did.
How many?
Two.
What did we use to down their craft?
Well, I say aircraft. It was the unidentified craft.
Yeah.
Is what I identified it as. And, yeah, they were two that went down.
All right. What kind of weapons did we use to take those down? Did we use conventional weapons?
We hit one with a M-72. It's called a LAW, an M-72 rocket-propelled grenade. And when it hit it, it tilted straight down and went down to the ground.
Okay, and what about the other one?
The other one went probably a quarter of a mile before it went down.
Okay, and we hit it with a Laws rocket, too?
Sir, sure did. We were firing everything, 50 cal, 60 cal, M16. We were firing everything we had at it.
A Laws rocket has, I believe, about a 1,400-foot range.
Yes, sir, roughly in that range, yes, sir.
So these had to be pretty close to you.
Oh, they were. They were real close.
Were they flying at very low altitude?
I'd say about 500 feet, maybe 600 feet.
Mm-hmm.
At the max.
Were you able to see when these laser beams were shooting out from the UFOs, were you able to see any apparatus from which the laser beams were coming?
No, sir. I could not see it because it was dark that night, and it was hard to see.
Okay, so two of them went down.
Yes, sir.
What was it that caused this battle to end? Was that it? Two of their craft went down and the rest of them pulled back? Is that how it happened?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Sure was.
All right. So these craft went down. Obviously, one of them went down right there on the base.
Yes, sir. Sure did.
What happened to the wreckage?
Well, the next thing I heard was we had two jets land at the airfield there at Fort Benning at Lawson Field. These two jets had no tail numbers on them anywhere. They were whitewashed, and where my unit's at, we're kind of up on a hill, and we can look down the hill and see the whole airbase. We watched these forklifts loading pieces of these craft into these jets. And neither jet, there were two jets, neither one had any markings whatsoever on them. They were both whitewashed.
Were you able to determine who owned those jets? Jim, were you able to determine who owned those jets?
Oh, yeah, they were ours. There was Air Force guys flying them.
Okay. Now, did all of the wreckage from both of these craft make it onto those jets?
No, sir, it did not.
What happened to the rest of it?
Well, there was some pieces that were took that they didn't know about at the time.
Okay, and
they're in a secure location right now.
Okay, so there are pieces of these UFOs that are in a secure location. And how, if someone were to look at these pieces of the UFO, how would they know that it is a UFO?
By the material, how it reacts, and it's unbelievable. It really blew my mind when I seen the material. I held it, I touched it, I crumbled it up, it straightened right back out.
And you said these jets did not have any markings on them. What about the UFOs? Did they have any markings on them?
No, sir. No markings whatsoever.
All right. Now, you told us about these jets that landed and they were white. November the 28th, 2006, there is another incident again at Fort Benning, actually over at Columbus. Now, are you familiar with this one in 2006?
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir.
I'm reading the testimony of a person who was there and who saw this craft go down. It was definitely a UFO. It was about 100 feet in length.
Yes,
and this person says, and this is what was pretty interesting about it. They were driving, let's see here. They were traveling next to the Columbus Metro Airport at 1 p.m. the next day. And
right,
both of
sir.
These are Ph.D. academics, both of these witnesses. And they saw a completely unmarked 727 jet.
Exactly.
As the plane, I'm quoting now, as the plane taxied by us no more than 100 feet away, my companion's vehicle lost all power, all gauges went dead, power steering, engine, everything, and we glided to a stop. We both exited the vehicle thinking something mechanically major had gone wrong with his vehicle. At that moment, the plane began to slowly pass us as it was taxiing from the main runway. I picked up my cell phone to call a mechanic and found my cell phone was dead. My companion's cell phone was also dead. We both watched the plane as it went by us. Both of us are veterans and have traveled many times on 727s. Almost at the same moment, we both spoke because we noticed the plane had no markings of any kind, no tail numbers, nothing. The plane had a strange finish and almost looked, excuse the obvious pun, whitewashed.
Exactly.
Same words you used. All right, now, I'm going to skip down and read where they started making calls to try and identify that plane. Let's see. Uh, I started to ask the man who answered the telephone about the plane. He called the fire and police crash station. Started to ask him about the plane. He rudely cut me off and stated, "That's a private plane. Thank you," and hung up. Approximately 30 minutes later, I called CSG Aviation, and a young woman answered, and I inquired about the plane. She told me it was a government plane. I asked how she knew, and she said that, and this is a quote from her, "It had picked up something which it loaded into its rear section, and it also refueled. A man in a coat and tie came from the plane and paid for the fuel with a credit card, which had U.S. Treasury and an account number on it." She said, "That's how I knew it was a government plane." An additional call to the airport administration office confused me further. At that time, I was now told that I was mistaken, that no plane, much less a 727, had landed or taken off during that time period. So, tell me about this one in 2006. What happened?
Well, the call that I got called from a tech sergeant, E6, telling me what was going on down there. And I'm thinking, okay. I said, where did it go down? Well, he told me what block it went in. On the military post, you have different blocks, like C block, B block, K block, you know, different blocks like that. And Fort Benning is a big post. And this here was on the outer, almost in the outer perimeter, on post, off post, but the craft where it was at was on post. That's why the response was so quick.
Well, here is this same witness. This is what the witness says. Scores of police, fire, and at least one FAA official raced to the scene. The search was joined by personnel from Fort Benning, the Georgia State Patrol, and several unidentified personnel, according to the officials.
Right, sir.
Were you there?
Yes, sir. I was there.
So this account by this witness is true?
Yes, sir. Very true.
Now, the witness says that what was released to the public was that, yes, there were calls from witnesses who saw it go down. The police and fire department went. Everybody searched for 5 hours, but they found nothing. Is that true?
They did find something.
They did find something. What did they find?
Yes, sir, sure did.
Describe what they found.
Well, from the individual that I talked with, he was in charge at the site, and the same thing I described earlier, but a different type, shape, craft.
Okay, we have to step away for break. We'll catch that right there when we come back. You're listening to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Command Sergeant Major James Norton. James, when we went away for break, you were describing for us this craft that went down in 2006. The public were told that nothing was found, but you're telling us something was found, and you were about to describe it, and then the break took over. So describe for us what did go down.
Okay, I got a call from a Sergeant Major Baker at Fort Benning. I was in Columbus, Georgia at the time. He gives me a phone call and tells me about the situation. And I say, okay, where is it at? He tells me. I jump in my vehicle, I take off over there. And I get there, I'm stopped, you know, at the edge of the perimeter. And then he sees me and I'm waving at him. And he's telling them to let me on in, that I'm cleared to come in because I have a top secret security clearance. So I went in, and it was unbelievable. The craft that I seen there was totally different from the first two I've ever seen, the round circular type and then the oblong type. And this one here was totally different. It was more like a, I'd say, well, it wasn't exactly a triangle, but shaped similar to a triangle. And it was flatter, you know, shorter than the other one that I had seen.
In all these crashes, I mean, you saw two go down in this battle in 1977. You were injured in this battle. You were a participant in the battle. Okay, and you were injured. And then you saw another one, I believe you said, in 1986.
Yes, sir.
And then this one in 2006.
Yes, sir.
When these things crash and they are recovered, are these unmanned drones, or do they have a crew on board? And if so, were any of the crew recovered?
Yes, sir. Sure were.
Tell us about it.
Well, excuse me there, phone ringing. Sergeant Major Baker had contacted me about it, and I went to the scene. And he said, Jim, I'm going to show you something that you can't talk about. If you do, I'll probably court-martial. And I said, okay. So now this is, you know, a few years back. And I talked to him recently, as yesterday, and he is still active down there at Fort Benning. And he told me, he said, look, you want to tell the people the truth? He said, go ahead. He said, they're not going to do nothing. He said, I've got 25 years active duty. They're not going to, you know, do anything to me. I said, well, I'm not going to tell them where it's coming from. Plain and simple.
Okay. Now, well, describe for us these bodies that were found.
Right. When he showed me, they had some tarp over them, two of them, that were covered up so nobody else could see them. He tells me, he said, follow me, I'm going to show you something you've never seen before. And I said, okay. So I walk with him, and he's got one other guy with him, a sergeant E5, which is military police, CID, and he pulls the tarp back. And when he does, I got the shock of my life.
What did you see?
I seen I don't know how to describe it. It was not a human being, I'll tell you that. It was shaped similar to a human being, a little bit short, probably about 4 foot, maybe. One was, the short one. Then the other one was real tall. Looked totally different from the other one. I don't know if it was because of injuries or burns or what.
Okay. You've seen, I'm sure, on television and in publications, pictures of where people have done artist renderings of aliens that people describe having seen, and we usually call those the grays. Did they look like that?
Yes, sir. That's the tint they had to them. They were kind of gray.
And did they have that sort of a almond-shaped face and the big eyes?
Yes, sir.
Now, the one that was taller, how tall would you say that one was?
Probably twice as tall as the small one.
So he was eight
maybe,
feet tall?
6 foot, maybe taller. It was hard to tell, that, you know, being on the ground, but that's what it looked like to me.
Okay, so 6 feet or taller.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Now, back in 1977, in this battle that took place at Fort Benning, and two UFOs went down, what about there? Were their bodies recovered there?
Yes, sir. Sure were. Four. Four bodies recovered.
Were there any live aliens recovered?
Yes, sir. Two.
So in 77, there are two live ones recovered and four that were deceased.
Yes, sir.
What happened to these live aliens?
I do not know. To this date, I do not know.
In 1986,
when the area and a boxed amulet was brought in, and when I seen it leave, that's when I knew they had put them in that amulet.
Did you see the bodies in 77?
Yes.
What did they look like?
Similar to what we talked about a minute ago, but facial features were a little bit different. They were a little taller. It was more like a greenish gray instead of a regular gray. Their mouth was different, their eyes, the nose, their hands were different, totally different from the other ones.
Did they look more human or less human?
less human.
All right, and the live ones, did you see the live ones?
Yes, sir. And what followed after that, the next 2 days, I had a headache so bad. I don't know why. It was like, you know, something in my head was just like a corkscrew screwing in my head. I had a headache so bad for 2 days after that.
All right, now, you describe for us what you saw when you saw these live ones. What were they doing, just wandering around or what? What was going on?
Well, one was like on the ground. Wasn't really sitting like in a prone position. And the other one was just, you know, standing, just looking around like he was in a daze or lost.
And then what happened next?
Oh, that's when the medics come in. And the two that were alive, they took him into the box ambulance. The other ones that were dead, I don't know what happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea because I was ordered to leave.
All right, now in 1986, you told us there was one that went down on Fort Benning, I believe you said. Now, were there any crew members that were recovered from that one?
Yes, sir. Sure were.
How many?
Two.
Were they alive or dead?
Dead.
And do you know what happened to them?
No, sir. I do not, because where it was at, it was right on the border of on post, off post, on the backside of Fort Benning.
Okay, so that would be towards Columbus?
Yes, sir. Muskogee County, yes, sir.
Okay.
Columbus, Georgia.
Okay, but I mean, you would the side of the base that you're talking about would be what, the north side?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, so the... and did you see those two aliens as well?
Yes, sir.
All right, now, let's see. We have four dead ones in 77. We have two dead ones in 86. Yep. We have two live ones in 77. In 2006, how many were there? How many aliens?
The two that I've seen on the ground, you know, the one short one, the one tall one, they mm-hmm. were deceased.
Okay, and there were no live ones there?
No, sir.
Now, when you compare, you compared the ones in 77 to the ones in 2006. But what about the ones in 86? What did they look like?
Totally different. Totally so all different facial features, hands, arm, body, totally different.
So all three groups of aliens were totally different from each other?
Yes, sir.
Now, the ones in 86.
Different, you know, and in the U.S., you know, we have Americans. Overseas, we have Spanish, German, you know, different features.
Yeah, I understand. We have to step away for a break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and for those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here. My most sincere sympathy to you for whatever caused you to miss the first hour. Ladies and gentlemen, if you missed the first hour, it's something to go cry about. My guest this evening is Command Sergeant Major James Norton. And, James, I had to cut you off in mid-sentence when we went to break. So I want to give you the opportunity to finish your thought.
Okay, bud.
Yeah. Go ahead.
It was unbelievable when I seen what he showed me. And I was told that they were waiting on some transportation to pick this craft up. And which they had already, you know, took the other, I guess what you call aliens away, in the ambulance box truck. And he told me that they, on the radio, I could actually hear it, and plus he told me about the jets at the field are ready to load. And I'm thinking, okay, are they going to load this crap? He said, yes, that's what they're waiting on right now. So, and then another whitewashed 727 jet was there on the field waiting for them to bring the, it was on a, they put this one on a low boy and had a tarp over it, covered up, took it down to Lawson Field, loaded it up on the 727. Still, no number on the tail section or anywhere on the plane. Another whitewashed jet, same as before.
Has anybody ever threatened you face-to-face about this?
Oh, yes, sir. Sure has.
Tell us about that.
My post commander at Fort Benning.
Now, that would have been when, in 1977?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, sure did. I got called to his office because I went off post and in civilian clothes and talked to a news reporter at Columbus, Georgia, WTV 9, I believe was the reporter where he worked out of. And that evening, it was showed on TV. Well, the next morning, I get called to the post commander's building, Building 4. And as I walked in, he told me to get his attention. He told me, if you speak of this again or say anything about this, you may disappear. You may be court-martialed. You will never see your family again. He said, I'm not kidding with you. He said, I mean what I say. I will send you to Leavenworth Worth for the rest of your life, and you will stay in prison. You will never see your family again.
Did you believe him?
Oh, yes, sir. I mean, he's a commanding general. Yes, sir, I believed him. You know, I was only then an E6. And he told me like it was. So I didn't go off post anymore to any TV reporters. I learned my lesson on that.
All right. I want to clarify something, and then I have a question for you. Now, back in 2006, you got a call from someone named Baker.
Yes, sir.
What was his rank?
He was E6.
Okay. Now, an E6 would be, what, a first sergeant?
A staff sergeant, yes, sir.
Staff sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Staff sergeant means he's on the staff of the base administration, right?
Right, sir. Not commissioned officer. Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Now,
he actually took my place when I left active duty there.
Mm-hmm.
He was the next in line to take my position, so he got that position.
Now, you're in the reserves now, but you're on active status.
I am with the Alabama State Guard. Yes, sir.
Now, here you are. You were threatened for talking with the WTVM Channel 9 reporter. You were threatened with disappearing.
Oh, yeah.
You're sitting here now talking to me, and we have people around the world by the millions listening.
Right, sir.
And you're not afraid of disappearing?
Oh, no. No, let them come. I got something for them. If somebody tries to hurt me or my family, I've got something for them. All the time in the military I've been in, I've learned how to take care of myself and my family.
Okay, fair enough.
And what, which they, nobody knows where I live at, so that's one good thing.
Have you been in touch with John Vasquez?
Oh, yeah, me and John, yes, sir. I sure have.
What was his response when you first were in contact with him and told him your story is real and I was there, I saw it?
Oh, yes, sir.
What was his response?
I thought he, you know, it sounded like he started crying on the phone. He said, nobody believed me. I said, hey, I was there. I know. I believe you. I experienced it, and said, you know, several other troops in our unit experienced it. And recently I have made contact with about 24 of my unit at that time to come forward also.
Now, when you talk with them, I believe you said that they don't want to come forward because they're afraid it'll hurt their careers.
Right.
But when you talk with them privately, do they remember and do they have vivid memory of it?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Since they don't want to appear in person or give their name, they said they would give a sworn affidavit to the fact of what happened that night.
How many other battles with UFOs do you think the U.S. military has been engaged in?
I know of two other that were not on U.S. soil.
General Brown, who had served in Vietnam and was Secretary of the Air Force, made a public statement, and I wish I could remember the date. I reported on it here on this show, but several years ago, while he was Secretary of the Air Force, he made a public statement to reporters that they, the U.S. Air Force had engaged UFOs in battle in Vietnam.
Yes, sir.
Do you know about that?
Yes, sir. I read about it. Sure did.
All right. Now, you know of two other battles. Is that one of them?
Yes, sir.
What's the other one?
Trying to remember what date it was. 80. It was early 80s. Where I was monitoring the radio on the frequency. And I'm a ham operator, so I monitor a lot of frequencies. I also talk to the space through my ham radio, get information from them. I have kinfolk that work at NASA. And it was early 80s, 81, I think, was 81, middle of the year.
And where did this battle take place?
It was in Ramstein, Germany.
In Ramstein, Germany?
Yes, sir.
And you were listening to it happen on the radio?
Yes, sir. I have a HF system in my house and in my vehicle, and I talk around the world on 5 watts, and I can receive any signal wherever in the world.
Okay, but you were listening to it as it was happening, is that right?
Sir, yes, sir. I listen to a lot of military frequencies. I'm used to it. That's all I've ever done in the military, you know. It's monitored, you know, a lot of radio frequencies and everything like that. And I just be scanning the bands, in the aircraft bands, upper 300 megahertz, 400 megahertz, and the 240 megahertz. That's where I heard the conversation going on.
What were they saying? What were they talking about?
There were two jets engaged with a UFO. They would fire missiles, and the missiles would dud out before it got to them. And then I heard that one pilot talking to the other one, you know, that, you know, I'm pushing the max now. I can't get no faster. Well, undoubtedly he had his afterburners on trying to catch back up to it. And I'm monitoring all this stuff, and I wish that at the time I'd had some kind of recorder so I could have recorded it to let you hear it. But yeah, I monitor a lot of frequencies, like in an aircraft band.
So you know of these two other battles. Do you know of any of these, either of these other two, where we had troops that were injured?
Other than the ones in the 86, that was it.
Now, I didn't know there were any troops injured in 86. I knew about 77.
Right.
What happened in 86 that we had troops injured?
The craft that was on the backside of Fort Benning, right on the border.
Yeah.
Of Columbus, Georgia, Muskogee County.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What happened?
That's when, you know, I was telling you about the craft and the Sergeant Baker was there.
Yeah. But what happened that caused troops to get injured?
It was the short one, and then they had a taller one.
Mm-hmm.
That's the two that I've seen that were dead, but they were two other ones that were still alive then.
Yeah, but I'm talking about American troops.
American. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Do you know of any of these other battles where American troops were injured, other than 1977?
No, sir. Not right offhand, I don't, sir.
How many were injured in 1977?
Oh, goodness. I know at least 20 or 25, somewhere right in there, that were injured pretty bad.
Part of the story that John tells us is, he tells us the story of a mass abduction of some of the troops.
Yeah, memory lapse, sickness, all kind of stuff.
Were you abducted?
I seen some of the troops just walking around in a daze like they were lost. You'd go up and talk to them. They wouldn't answer you. They wouldn't even look at you. I mean, it's just like, you know, they were a zombie. They didn't know what was going on, what had happened, or anything.
What about yourself? Were you abducted?
Yes, sir.
So you were taken on board the craft?
Yep. And I tried to get the person that hypnotized me to come forward, but he refused because he is afraid of something might happen.
Uh-huh. But outside of hypnosis, you didn't have any memory of being on the craft. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I did.
Oh, you did remember even before you were hypnotized?
Yes. Oh, yeah, I remember.
Tell us about what happened. How were you taken on the craft? What did they, what did it look like in there? What did they do?
Like taking samples, blood, skin, all kind of stuff. Like a regular medical facility. How they, you know, when you go in, if you're sick, they take samples of everything, check it and everything like that.
Mm-hmm. Did they give you any injections?
I had marks on me that looked like injection marks, yes, sir. I can't tell for sure if that's what it was or not.
Mm-hmm.
But I did have a piece in my leg that was taken out that resonated on the 300 to 400 megahertz band.
How big was it?
It was about the size of a lead pencil, like a number two lead pencil.
Mm-hmm.
It was about maybe an eighth of an inch long.
Who took that
out
for you?
I still have it bottled. The doctor put it in.
And who took that out for you?
Sir?
Who took that out of your leg?
At the Martinuck Hospital. Surgeon.
Okay, a military surgeon?
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. What did he say about it?
He said, I don't know what it is. He tried to analyze it under a microscope and look at it and all. He said, I've never seen anything like this before.
How many of our troops do you think got tagged with something like that?
From the results of what I saw that night,
yeah,
of all these troops just walking around like they were lost, didn't
yeah
know what was going on, like, you know, they were like had a concussion or something, probably hundreds of them. Because, you know, there were 12 to 1,300 of us on that range that night.
How many do you think have had it taken out of their leg?
Well, I've talked to several of the other guys. Some of them had it in their arms, their wrists, their neck, their chest, their back, just, you know, all over their body, different places.
Okay, but how many have had them removed?
I know of three.
And the rest of them still have these implants?
Right. I know of three that have had them took out, and besides myself.
Mm-hmm. Any idea what it was for?
To me, the only thing I could figure is like a tracking device. Like you insert into like a K-9, and it gets lost, and then they can track him.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that, like a GPS system.
Uh-huh. So.
But I still have it in the bottle, and the I guess it's alcohol. I still have it in the bottle.
So you still have it in your possession?
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. Anytime anything happened in the military, I documented everything. I mean, if I stomped my toe, busted my lip, scratched my everything was documented.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that from my two older brothers that were also, you know, veterans. And they told me off the bat when I first went in, document everything that happens to you in the military, which I did.
when I was international police, and when I was international police and I was sent overseas for the very first time, I was told, every piece of paper that you are handed, you file it away and keep it. Every piece of paper, you keep it.
Exactly.
So I'm familiar with that.
I've got copies of everything in the military and civilian. I have copies of everything, and I have one in a safety deposit box.
So all right, I'll tell you what I would like to do.
Military or civilian life is in that safety deposit box.
What you're telling us tonight is as stunning as what John Vasquez told us. Maybe more so, because I think a lot of folks had sort of heard John, and then there were no new developments for a long time, and sort of forgot about it, maybe. And so
it took me several months to find John. I mean, I searched and searched and searched for him and couldn't find him. And then I talked with Bruce, Stephen Holmes, and he gave me the information how to get in touch with John. See, I've been looking for him for years and couldn't find him.
Well, what I would like to do is invite our audience to participate in the show with us here tonight. And I know there may be some people who have questions. Maybe there are some people who have comments. And, in fact, maybe there are some other people who were present at some of these events that you have told us about that may want to get in touch with us and may want to share their experience with us. So, ladies and gentlemen, the telephone line is open. The main number here is 623-444-5889. The toll-free number is 888-223-4599. And if you are outside of the USA or outside of Canada, I don't have a toll-free number for you out there. But what I have is the flash message option on my website. So you can go to my website, scroll down. You'll see Command Sergeant Major James Norton's picture. To the right of that is a link that says flash message. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Hi, Jim, I want to know that I appreciate your courage for coming forward. But I have a question for you on the various species of bodies you've seen.
Okay, sir, go ahead.
Would it be safe to I wouldn't say safe. Could you describe any of them as having slightly reptilian or insectoid features?
Yes, sir, similar features, yes, sir. Sure would.
Which groups?
The larger ones, the taller ones.
Okay, that's all I really wanted to ask.
All right, thank you. 623-444-5889. If you have a question or a comment for Command Sergeant Major James Norton. Toll free 888-223-4599. That works in the USA and Canada. And then, of course, our flash message option for those who are outside the USA and outside of Canada. This question that Brent asked about the reptilian, I want to get to that in just a moment. We're going to take this call, and then I want to come back to that.
Okay, Kev. Sir, what frequency are y'all on broadcasting?
We're not a station. It's a syndicated show, so it depends. It depends on where you are as to whether there's a station or not. But we're also on the Internet worldwide. We're on all mobile devices worldwide. And we're on Internet TV. We're on AM and FM in various cities around the country. Okay, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hello, Terry.
Hi, Kevin. Jim, I was wondering, could you tell me which time of the three that you believe that you were abducted?
Well, I know in 77, when I had the memory lapse and all, and it was just like I didn't know where I was at the time, wandering around, couldn't figure out what had happened. I mean, it was like I'd had a blow to my head, like a concussion, couldn't remember, had a headache from hell, and it lasted for, you know, 2 or 3 days.
So the time you really felt sick is the time you believe you were abducted then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could tell something had happened, especially with my uniform. You know, I try to keep a neat, nice, clean uniform. And then when I do, you know, wake up and realize my uniform is all screwed up, my T-shirt is gone, my socks are gone, something's not right with that picture.
I was wondering, out of all these three incidents, do you have any rhyme or reason why they came here and being vulnerable? Like you say, they got shot down, so why, do you have any idea why they did what they did?
Unless they were there that night to observe the new system that the government put into effect. It was called a Joint Attacks Weapon System. It's a brand new system that the government put into effect to train the new troops in. And it's a hell of a challenge, I'm going to tell you that. I went through it, and it's a hell of a challenge.
Okay, thank you, sir. That's all I have.
Thank you, sir.
All right. The telephone lines are open. The telephone numbers are on the screen for those watching on our TV channel. If you're not watching on our TV channel, you need to join our members area so you can. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, this is Mike from Kentucky.
Hello, Mike. Go ahead, Mike.
How you doing, Chief Master Sergeant Norton? I talked to you on the phone yesterday afternoon.
Yes, sir. I remember, sir.
So how are you today?
Doing pretty good.
One question that I have to ask, since you y'all were testing that system, that new system, is there a possibility that things were just observing, but because of the tests, one of them got caught up in it, and then the rest of them responded?
Yes, sir. I believe that's exactly what happened. Because when I seen this individual shoot this this M-72 and hit this craft, that's when all was loose. That's when we really got fired back off. And I do believe they were there to observe and not interfere at the time.
Okay. But you know how the best laid plans of mice and aliens, you know, you get too close and somebody gets a little careless and things like this happen.
Exactly, exactly. And the guy that fired the M-72, the law, was a...
Okay, your audio cut out. Say it again. The guy that fired the law is what happened?
He was a private E-1.
Uh-huh.
And I had told him to keep it shouldered, do not fire. And
yeah.
Then the next thing I know, he fires it.
So you think he panicked?
Yes, sir, he sure did. You know, what we've seen, I can't scare anybody, especially happening that quick and the events that happened, you know, during the time. Yeah, he panicked. I just 100% sure he panicked.
So in E-1, he hadn't been out of basic training that long?
No, sir, he sure was not. I think like 3 months he'd been out of basic.
Did you say he died in that attack when they fired back at him?
No, he was wounded.
Okay.
He was wounded, he was burnt and wounded.
Okay, I look forward to talking to you again in the future. So y'all have a great night. Thank you, Kevin.
All right. Were there any deaths of U.S. troops during that battle?
Yes, sir. Sure were.
How many died?
Two in the helicopter.
All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll be back, folks. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Command Sergeant Major James Norton. James, when we went away for break, you were beginning to tell us about, or you were telling us that there were two American troops that did die in that confrontation with the UFOs in 1977, and it was the two helicopter crewmen, right?
Yes, sir.
Do you have any idea?
The one chopper that got hit went down immediately. It blowed in the sky. And I knew then from the explosion, because, I mean, the heat felt like, you know, it was right on us. And then the second one was hit in the tail rotor, and it all rotated down, which it hit pretty hard, but they survived. And see, that's what really got me. The FAA was never called in, never allowed to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that bothered me a lot right there, the cover-up.
All right, now, certainly the, let's see, now in 77, who was the president? I'm trying to remember. Was that Nixon? No.
No, crap.
Ford?
I think it was Ford, yes, sir. I believe it was.
Whoever the, I don't remember in 77 who was the president, but the president certainly would have been briefed on this, wouldn't you think?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. He sure would have. Especially when the Secretary of the Army was there that night. Clifford Alexander was there that night. You know, and he can't deny it. And none of his aides could deny it. They seen it. They were there. They witnessed it. That's what really upset me.
Do you think that Clifford Alexander and his aides would have written a report to the president about this?
Yes, sir. I believe they should have, or they would, because they were there and they witnessed it. I mean, they can't deny it. They were there. I was there beside them. That was my job for his security. Even though we had all these other troops around us, that was my job.
I wonder if said report, if it exists, I wonder where it is today. It's probably extremely highly classified.
Oh, yeah, probably above top secret. Probably.
Have you ever had any of these guys in black suits approach you and tell you that bad things are going to happen to you?
No, sir, not actually in person. I've had phone calls.
Uh-huh.
Never in person. But I know of my... watched several days in a row.
Say that again. I didn't understand. Say that again.
I say I know my house was being watched at one time.
Uh-huh.
And that was when I was a police officer. I was a military policeman on post, and at night I would work part-time with a police department close to Fort Benning.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to say the name of the department, but anyway, I knew that my house was being watched, because when you're trained as a police officer, you're trained to observe all this other, you know, activity going in your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had my neighbor tell me that they also seen these people watching my house with binoculars. And I say, okay. But no, they never did, you know, confront me face to face. Never did.
So the only face to face confrontations you've had have been with the base commander. Is that right?
I lost you. Say again, sir.
The only face-to-face confrontations that you've had have been with the base commander. Is that right?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, mm-hmm. sir. I got a good butt-chewing. And he told me right quick like what he would do to me.
All right, let's go back to the telephone line. And, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Caller, you want to talk to us? I guess not. When you call, ladies and gentlemen, you need to be listening to the telephone, not the radio. If you're listening to the telephone, you'll hear me when I bring you up on the air. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Ryan in Washington.
Hello, Ryan.
Yeah, is Clifford Alexander still alive, and where is this case going? Are you planning to go public with this more in the future, and I'll just take and go off the air?
All right.
Yes, sir. I plan on letting everybody know what's going on behind our backs, what our government's doing, and I don't want any gratuity, any money, or anything. I just want the people to know the truth, what goes on behind our backs. And that's all I ask.
Is Clifford Alexander still alive?
I'm not sure, sir. I'm not sure.
Do you think
that
if...
That was in 77.
Yeah.
And I think he was like in his maybe 40s or 50s then.
Well, so he could still be alive.
He could possibly still be alive, yes, sir.
Do you think if he's alive, he will ever... Do you think he will ever step forward and say, yes, this is true?
If I talk to him the right way, he may. If I can meet him face to face and, explain, that I've come forward, other guys have come forward, and well, we just want the truth told.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what are they going to do to him? He's probably, retired now, if he's still alive.
Are you familiar with Command Sergeant Major Robert Dean?
Yes, sir.
He's been talking about what he saw when he was at NATO headquarters. He's been talking about that for a number of years, and he says that nothing has ever happened to him. So... These people may be, it's a stretch, but they may be sharp enough to figure out that if they actually do something to you or to Robert Dean or John Vasquez and people like you, if they do something, it will confirm for the whole public that
exactly.
What you said was true.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Now, have you talked about this with any of your fellow soldiers?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I sure have. And I have told them what to do in case something happens to me and the location of certain items. I've talked with all of them in my unit, and they all agree with me.
Now, when you talk with them, what's their reaction about, Here's a command sergeant major telling us that UFOs are real, aliens are real, and he's seen UFOs and aliens, been in a firefight with them, was injured. What's their reaction to that?
Well, my proof was my medical records. And when I showed them my medical records on that date, exactly what happened to me and all the pictures that were taken of me, where I had the injuries, broken bones, and the other things, it kind of, woke them up. And they're saying, oh, my God, you went through that. And I said, yes, sir, I sure did. So I have talked all 80-something members in my unit right now, and they all agree, if anything happens to me, what to do.
Have any of them had experiences with UFOs?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I've had several of them tell me that they've seen things, had things happen. Yes, sir. Sure have.
All right, I want to go back to the reptilian creatures. You said they had sort of the taller ones had kind of a reptile look about them. What made them look reptilian?
The way their face was shaped and their mouth and their head was totally different from the smaller ones.
Uh-huh.
And you could really identify the difference between the two, because the shorter ones had a smoother type face, more pronounced, with their eyes, bigger eyes. The ears just almost didn't even exist. You could see it was like a little hole.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, that was it.
Now, back in 1977, UFO goes down. There's two living aliens that survived the crash.
Yes, sir.
Were you close enough to them that you could see details about their features?
Oh, yeah. They're good.
Okay,
when
now...
When they loaded them on the box ambulance, I was probably 10 feet away.
All right. Now, when you loaded them onto this...
security, so anytime anything like that happens, I had to be there. So I was about 10 feet away. When they escorted them, they actually had them by each side and walked them up into the box ambulance.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, was one of them one of the taller ones that had the reptilian look?
Exactly. Yes, sir.
Did you get a look into his eyes? Did his eyes have that up and down sort of a slot for a pupil?
Yes, sir.
They did.
You got it right.
Did they? Could you hear them talking to each other? Did they make any sounds?
No, no sounds whatsoever. Now they made some kind of certain expressions on their face, like an anger, you know, look. The other one looking, you know, like looked at each other and had different, you know, movements on their face. It's like they were talking to each other, but I didn't hear anything.
Uh huh.
And, you know, like one would, like, nod his head a little bit. The other one would, like, sideways, you know, something like that. But, no, there was no speech whatsoever.
And you don't know where these creatures were taken to?
I got a good idea that they went to Lawson Field on that white watch, yes, that 727.
And from there, do you have any idea where the jet went?
No, sir, I do not. When it left, it was gone. It was boogieing. It took off. And see, that's what surprised me, how quick it took off. From the time it was loaded with them, I mean, there was no taxi. They spun around, hit the turbos, they were gone. They were out of sight within just a minute.
Mm-hmm. Now, Lawson Field, where is it in relation to the city of Columbus? I know it's on the Fort Benning base, which is just south of Columbus. But where is Lawson Field?
Right on the river, actually, Lawson Field is right on the river boundary mm-hmm. to Fort Benning.
Okay, so it's on the west side.
Yes, sir. It's on the west side.
Is it on the northwest side up near Columbus?
No, it's on the south.
Okay.
South.
All right, now,
it's on the south side.
In 1986, there was a craft that went down on Fort Benning. You told us about it. What caused it to go down?
Did what, sir?
What caused it to go down, the one in 1986?
I have no idea. When I was told about it and I went to the location, you know, the sergeant I took in charge, I have no idea why it went down. No idea.
And what about the one in 2006? What caused it to go down?
I have no idea on that one either. I have no idea. Unless it's some mechanical with the craft or something.
Mm-hmm. All right, now here's a big question. Why Fort Benning? Fort Benning is obviously a hot spot. You have personally been present at three of these crashes. One of them involved battles,
right.
but you've been present at three of these crashes. Were there any other crashes that happened at Fort Benning that you haven't told us about?
I know of one off post. I don't know exactly the location, but I was told of one that did go down off post.
Uh-huh.
And the individual that was telling me this was a UFO guy mm-hmm. that has been studying this for years and years. And I said, where did it go down? And he said, it was off post. I said, well, where at from here? And he tried to explain to me, and I was not familiar with it, where he was trying to tell me.
All right, we're going to step away for a break, and we shall return. Back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Command Sergeant Major James Norton. James, we are just about to the end of the show. We are in the final leg of the flight here. You've told us that you're not trying to get any money out of this. You're not seeking any fame or fortune or gratuity out of this. You just want people to know. Where do you go from here?
Well, I've been trying to contact a lot of the service members that were there that night, and I've got in touch with quite a few of them, and I've asked them to meet with me and to write me out a statement, and I want to get it notarized, and I want them to tell their story.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked with my first sergeant, actually this morning, and my captain, the chief warrant officer, the lieutenants, and four of the sergeants. Actually, one was Sergeant Baker. And they are willing to come forward and either talk to you about it or either written affidavits.
Uh-huh.
And well, they are really enthused about it because we wanted to do something then, but when they seen what happened to me with the post commander, they kind of got a little scared because they were afraid of, you know, being busted down in rank or either sent to Leavenworth.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them, some of them, to go off post with me and talk with this news reporter. And they said, you know, I've been in the military a long time. If I do something like this, I can be busted down in rank or either court-martialed. I said, yeah, it's a good possibility. So I'm in the process of getting all their statements, and hopefully we're going to meet up at...
Don't tell us where.
Okay. It's Fort Benning, but it's going to be on a certain time and a certain date. And from there, we're going to go to a location undisclosed, because if I disclose this location, I'll probably lose everything that I have. So we're in the process of trying to get all the guys together in my unit. And everyone I've talked with is willing to come forward, tell their story what happened to that also.
I'm a little bit curious about the helicopter that was hit and then auto-gyroed to the ground, and the pilots survived. Were they injured?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, they sure were. They were shook up pretty bad.
How close were you to them?
The first one that went down, that blowed up, I knew there's no way they could have survived. Because, I mean, jet fuel, JP-4, it's real bad. And when it blows, it blows. I mean, it completely blew it was a UH-58 helicopter they were in. And when it got hit, it disintegrated. I mean, it just blowed all apart. So I knew the two pilots in that helicopter were dead. I knew for a fact. There's no way they could have survived.
Do you have any idea what story was told to their families? Do you have any idea what story was told to their families?
That they were on a maneuver, and that they had engine problems, and that it crashed. That's what I was told.
All right, now, do you... here we have UFOs that show up apparently to observe a exercise being conducted that night, and they get fired on. They return fire. We lose a helicopter. They lose two of their craft. Do you know where that second craft went down? One of them went down apparently pretty close to where you were standing, where you were located. Where did the other one go down?
About a quarter of a mile away. Anywhere from an eighth of a mile, a quarter of a mile away.
Still on the base?
Yes, sir. Still on the base. And there was a fire also from it.
And were there bodies recovered from that?
On that one, I do not know, sir. I do not know. I know where I was told it went down. And because when it went down, it caused a brush fire. And I know that the department's own post was called out. The department's off post were not called.
Okay, you mean the fire department?
Yes, sir, fire department.
Uh-huh. Do you think, now we're hearing a whole lot of stuff, when I say hearing, we're reading about it on the internet, where people have speculated that President Obama will be the disclosure president. Do you think that there's any validity to that, do you think he is going to step forward and tell the American people and the world about our contact with extraterrestrials?
Yes, sir. I want to tell you a little secret. I'm not going to tell you his name. I have a close friend that everywhere the president goes, he goes with him. He is a Marine, and I've had a few talks with him, and he's given me a lot of information, in which he does have a top secret security clearance also, same as the president. And he's told me a lot of things that's going to happen in the near future about this situation.
So it's, you're saying, based upon what he's told you, you think the president is going to step in front of the cameras and say it's real?
Yes, sir. I do believe so.
Any idea about the time frame? When is that going to happen?
Well, I know he was with the president when he went overseas. Wherever the president goes, he goes. And when he got back, he was talking to me about some of this, about disclosing it. And I asked him, I said, well, do you know when? He said, in the near future. So I do know that much.
Wow. Well, folks, you heard it here. And you've heard it from Command Sergeant Major James Norton. I have to say, I've done a lot of interviews over the years. I've been doing this now since 2000, and I do it every night, Monday through Friday. I've done lots and lots of interviews, and I've done a lot of them that were very, very surprising. I have to say this ranks among the elite group of most stunning interviews I've ever been involved with. The information you've shared with us tonight has been just phenomenal. I want you to know I appreciate it. And, man, I there's nothing I can do except hope for you and your family the very, very best.
Well, I appreciate it, sir. If I do get any more updates on any of the information, I will give you a call and share it with you.
Well, I want you to do that. I want you to stay in touch with us and let us know what's happening. And let us, you know, let us know if you're in difficulties.
Right, sir. Stanton Freeman, you know, I talked with him yesterday, and today, and he gave me a lot of information that I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
As far as help with some of the items. And he really helped me a lot. He is a very intelligent man.
Would it surprise you to know that I knew that Stanton Friedman called you?
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised, sir.
I wasn't going to bring it up.
He is a very intellectual man.
Yeah. I wasn't going to bring it up, but yeah, I knew that. And I knew that a very serious UFO researcher in touch with you today, and I happen to know which one.
He gave me some excellent information, especially about the labs that this needs to go to. And he said you won't have to worry about any security. So he really helped me out on that. He sure did.
Outstanding. Look, stay on the line with me for just a moment. I have to bring this in for a landing. Ladies and gentlemen, I told you last night you needed to be here, and now you know why. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.